Jordan, let's start. We're going to get into everything that has happened this postseason, but for broader context, how crazy is it to you that the Cavs actually made it, considering everything this season, considering the Dwayne Wade stretch, the Isaiah Thomas shenanigans, the trade deadline overshape, Ty Lue stepping away from the team for a little bit? How nuts is it that the Cavs actually are in a four straight finals? Because I'm a little bit surprised, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, and last night started off about as poorly as you can start. I mean, they were doing all the bad things that they've done in Boston this entire series. So I didn't feel super confident going in. And then once that game started and they sort of look like how they looked in on the road for a lot of these playoffs, I was not super confident that we were going to see a fourth straight finals. I mean, I tweeted this, I think, yesterday, like in the morning, because Brian Windhorst had that piece with 2 days ago now, or yesterday morning, whenever it was, where, you know, if you like kind of itemize like everything the Cavs have gone through this year, it's just really crazy to look at it kind of broken down like that. And I don't know. I mean, maybe other teams that I don't pay as close attention to go through the things that the Cavs have gone through in this 4 year period since LeBron came back. But I just don't think there's anything. I mean, I know there's never been anything like having to, I mean, if you just go back and start with Kyrie and having to deal with that, and then he leaves, and then you're waiting on Isaiah Thomas to come back from injury. And if you knew then that he was going to come back and fit in the worst way possible with this team, and like if you could think about that outcome while you were waiting for months for him to rehab himself back, just to be like, oh, this doesn't work at all, and now we have to trade him, is crazy. And then if you even take it further, because aside from all the trades that happened and the Ty Lue stepping away from the team and Kevin Love breaking his hand and now dealing with a concussion, all that stuff, then you were getting very minimal input from or impact, I should say, from, I mean, George Hill scored 6 points last night and had been bad on the road all series. And then Rodney Hood hasn't played in a few games. And Jordan Clarkson was bad Jordan Clarkson again last night. So like, they're not even, you know, they're barely getting contributions from any of the guys they traded for at the deadline. Larry Nance had a horrible game last night. So it's just, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like, teams don't go through the type of things the Cavs went through and make it to the finals. Like, it shouldn't happen. Like, if they would have lost that series to Indiana, it would have sucked, but it would have been like, I get it. Like, yeah, that probably makes sense because they're playing with a team that's played together for like a month and is not very good because they lost one of the top 10, 15 players in the NBA in Kyrie Irving. And they really don't have a second scorer. Like, Kevin Love some nights is great, some nights is not. I mean, like, if they had lost to Indiana, they would have been killed for it because LeBron's on the team. But like, really, it would have made sense. And if they would have lost this series, it probably would have made sense. So it's insane that they're back there if you kind of like bring it all full circle.
The poor Toronto Raptors.
And in the middle of all that, the Raptors still managed to get swept.
Yeah, like just the poor Raptors just getting body bagged by a not really good Cavs team.
History will not look kindly back on that series for the Raptors, considering what happened to the Cavs in the two series sandwich between that one.
Yeah, not a good look for Toronto. But yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, like, the Cavs have spent half of this postseason throwing stuff at the wall, hoping it works. They're relying on LeBron to carry them. I mean, he played 48 minutes in a game 7. And, you know, even in that third quarter, when I think the Rozier block happened in that quarter, he had some really good plays in that quarter, but it wasn't like LeBron in that quarter was dominant, aggressive LeBron. I mean, a lot of the Twitter conversation around this game in that quarter was, why is LeBron not attacking the rim? Why is he taking these long jump shots? And like, he kind of took, in my mind, like took his foot off the gas pedal just a little bit, because he probably had to, because for what he did in the fourth to cap it off like he did, he almost needed to get that extra reservoir of energy. I think the Kyrie trade is like the standalone thing that set the Cavs on this path. I don't think there's another way of looking at it. I'm very here for like Ante Zizic, because him and Jetty are like the bestest friends in the world, and like, I think he might be kind of decent. I don't know if you saw the picture of him and Jetty with the trophy, but it's just like it's the most innocent thing I've ever seen in my life.
It's like a buddy sitcom. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and like, you don't get a lot of some of the stuff that's happened this season if Kyrie doesn't edit. There's some stuff of this Cavs season I will think about for a while, but aside from the Kyrie trade, which I don't know if you agree is like the biggest reason, that set all of this in motion and therefore is the most impactful thing, and Kyrie's obviously very good, what else to you is like the thing that put the Cavs in this path? Like, what is the other thing that went on this season that you think put the Cavs in the situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, you know, we talk about the Kyrie trade, but I even think, I mean, I always will go back to what happened with David Griffin and Dan Gilbert basically being like, I'm not going to give you the money and power you deserve because I don't think general managers are all that important, which like that will always, I don't know what's going to happen in the finals. I don't think it's going to go well for the Cavs. And I think when we kind of look back on this season, it's going to be really hard to escape, even though like this is, I think regardless of the outcome of the finals, like this season will still have a kind of like feel good feel to it just because they were able to go through the East again with this team. And I don't think like the outcome of the finals is going to kind of change feeling like good about that. But I do think it's going to be impossible to not think about what happened in the summer, even before the Kyrie trade. And if you've listened to David Griffin on subsequent kind of podcasts and the media stuff he's done since that, it makes it pretty clear that the Cavs had nobody there who had a relationship strong enough with Kyrie, because he left and his a couple guys that had been in that front office left with him. And they had nobody there that knew Kyrie well enough or that Kyrie trusted enough to like sit down and have a conversation and try to change his mind about requesting a trade. And like
LeBron not doing that as well. Like as far as we know, LeBron never had the moment where he went to Kyrie and said, let's work this out. Like as far as we know, that never happened.
Yeah. So like there was just nobody. And then, you know, Kyrie went on his China tour and was just kind of gone, like off the map. So like it was really it was too late by the time that, you know, they made if they made any effort to try and sit him down, because David Griffin was one of the only guys in that front office and at the top of the organization that had like a really strong relationship with Kyrie. And so I think that was it was just a very hubris kind of move, and you know, doesn't want to hurt his pride by Dan Gilbert, so because he thinks he's like the machine that makes everything run, so who needs David Griffin, we can do this with like anybody as GM. So like that to me, that will bother me for a really long time, because you know, yesterday somebody tweeted that stat line of Kyrie and LeBron in game 5 of the 2016 finals where they both scored over 40 points, and like I retweeted and said, you know, this was supposed to be the beginning of that. Like that was supposed to be happening for the next 5 years. And even though maybe it wouldn't have mattered, like maybe David Griffin is still here, but he couldn't talk Kyrie down and Kyrie demanded a trade anyway. And maybe that never gets solved. But like, I mean, this Cavs team, you could have had LeBron and Kyrie together for a long time. And like, no matter what happens in the future, if LeBron stays and they somehow like wrangle like Paul George or Kawhi Leonard or whatever happens in the future, like it's still going to be a bummer that Kyrie and LeBron only lasted 4 years. Like that's really kind of a tragedy. So, that's what I always go back to, is the Kyrie thing happened and they had to scramble and they had to put together one team and then they put together another team at the trade deadline. But even before that, I just will never understand why Dan Gilbert, who throws money at everything like it's no issue, like just wouldn't give, who is like renowned, like everybody in the league knows David Griffin is a great GM and he made great moves that helped this team win a title, and for you to just kind of like look at that and be like, meh, we're good, I think we can do this with Kobe Altman. It's just like, I don't know. So that to me will always be the point that kind of set this really weird season in motion.
Yeah, I am 100% with you on that. I think the two other things that stand out to me is, number one, if Isaiah Thomas had just been good, I wonder what this sort of looks like. You know, maybe they still have to make some kind of trade, because I think this team, even now, is not particularly deep. But if Isaiah had been good and healthy, I wonder if there would have been some fun. Because I do think, you and I talked about this a while back, but there was some buy-in on him from the fan base, I think, early on. I mean, the first game of the year, or the second game of the year I covered, there was like a family with Isaiah Thomas jerseys, and I feel bad for them now. Should have bought Jetty. Yeah. Should have bought Jetty ones, guys. Like,
should have bought Jetty. You always buy Jetty.
Yeah, always buy Jetty. Like 100%. Just even if they weren't even out yet, just like pre-order them or something. Or like, just don't get Isaiah Thomas. Don't get the new guy with a bad hip. But like, they, if he works out, that I wonder what that looks like. And I wonder. I just wonder if, I think you're right about David Griffin. And then I wonder just if they had, like, what the, if maybe the enjoyment level or like the dynamics of the team are much different, and like that in itself would have its own issues. But if they would have made some sort of big deal in the summer, that would have been like, if the Paul George thing actually happens, which we know the Stars talked about it, we know that it fell apart at some stage, we, that would have kind of been interesting as well. Looking at game seven though, we're going to go back to LeBron because he was amazing. He's been great this whole playoffs, but holy crap, Jeff Green game.
Jeff Green game.
Look, I got an email. I'm not going to name the listener, but like, he was like, why are you bagging on Jeff Green all the time? And I'm like, because every data point available tells me that Jeff Green is like a struggle bus. But like, props to Jeff Green for being in a situation where the Cavs needed him to play really well, playing his best game of the postseason, his first game back in the starting lineup since that disastrous game one start against the Pacers. Oh, up and down season for him, but I think if you look at game seven, the way he played, he made a couple threes, he defended well. He also just, when he actually is moving downhill and is actually like running the floor and is not just like spotting up on the wing, he like does stuff that is useful. And like, maybe that's not going to be as useful against better like teams. Like if they play the Rockets, there's going to be a slew of good wings that might guard him, and maybe he could draw some fouls against him. Although his like best game of the season was against the Rockets when he shot like 16 free throws or something.
Yeah, that's true.
Golden State obviously has a lot of wing guys, and they'll have someone good on him probably. But props to Jeff Green for just being like amazing in Game 7. And I didn't really talk about this much on the recap show because LeBron was LeBron, but holy crap, Jeff Green game in Game 7 in Boston. And it hit for him, just the emotion that he was talking about, being back in the league and everything like that, when he got asked about if he thought about making the finals after his heart surgery, just like a really cool moment for a guy who for all the negative stuff he gets on Twitter and the criticisms I've given him, he's like a really nice dude every time I've talked to him. So shouts to Jeff Green.
Yeah, no, shouts to Jeff Green. Like I think people sometimes like conflate like us being negative on Twitter about Jeff Green to being like, oh, you guys hate Jeff Green, and if he succeeds, it like you won't even enjoy it, which is like not what that is. It's just like he is one of the more frustrating players that I've watched in the NBA, precisely because of like games like last night, because when he plays to his strengths and like doesn't try to do too much, like you said, like just takes too many threes or tries to hit fadeaway mid-range jumpers, like when he just plays within his means and like takes advantage of mismatches like he did last night, where he gets the ball in the post and instead of trying to fade away, he just bullies his way to the hoop. And then like, he was unbelievable in transition last night. Like his body control is phenomenal. Like he was great in transition, and it just helped LeBron not have to like run all the way down the court on a transition play. LeBron can just pass it up the head to Jeff Green. So like that helped a lot to kind of help LeBron savor 30 seconds of not having to go full speed. And yeah, I mean, he shot 2 for 9 from three, and I still get really frustrated when like LeBron is driving and decides to kick it out to Jeff Green, because it's like, especially when you have Jarrett Smith or Kyle Korver on the floor, it's like, just please swing it to somebody else. But you know, he hit two, and the one he hit was a huge three when the Celtics had gone on a little bit of a run. And I was legitimately worried that that was going to be the run that was going to put the game away. He hit that huge three to, I think, bring it back within two. No, I mean, he was fantastic. And I think he's been really good defensively these last few games too, especially as like a random rim protector where he's going straight up and getting jump ball calls because he's got both hands on the ball. I mean, he's so switchable on defense. Like, he really is, and when he's engaged, he can switch from Al Horford to Jason Tatum to whoever. And he had a couple of really good possessions on Al Horford too, because like he's strong. Like Horford moves Kevin Love more easily than he moves Jeff Green. So like Jeff Green, when he got switched on to Horford last night, like I felt okay. I was okay with that switch. So yeah, man, huge shout out to Jeff Green, who, it's just crazy that you know, he has that surgery in 2012 at the Cleveland Clinic, and now he's going to the finals with Cleveland. It's just like, that's one of those things that is like just very, I don't know, one of those very cool coincidences that happens in sports that just make it a little bit more meaningful than it is. But like for him to have had that surgery here, and then the one, you know, this is his first year. They got him for the veterans minimum. Like, and now he just played a huge role in game seven to help the Cavs get to the finals. Like, that's a pretty cool story.
He was cool that he got a podium game in Boston where he obviously played to start his career. First forged that relationship with Ty Lue, mind you, as well. That's where him and Ty sort of first connected. And then you look at him, just the like, I love the post game stuff of how excited everybody was. Like, we talked about Jetty and Zizic. Love that John Holland is just like living his best life. Love that Lennon Perantes is living his best life and just like is there. I love that Carl White is just like along for this ride as well, even though he just like signed with the team on the last day of the regular season.
Yeah, actually, can we talk about some of the reactions in the locker room? Because you saying that makes me laugh so hard, because it's just like no shots at Rodney Hood, but like watching him in the locker room, like taking pictures of the trophy, and he had something. He's like, we came all the way from Mississippi, and it's like, yeah, I mean, like, it's a cool moment for him too, but it's just really funny because, like, man, you almost did everything you could so that this moment didn't happen. Your numbers are the worst. Your on-court numbers are literally just like screaming for the Cavs to lose. So then you don't play at all. It's just really funny. Like, I'm happy for him, you know, like who knows if Rodney Hood ever gets back to the finals again after this year, but it's also just like, you had literally negative impact, and it's just funny to watch him in the locker room. Like, yeah, let's go, baby. We did this, you know, like that stuff cracks me up.
He cost himself so much money. Just so much.
He's going to have a rough summer.
Yeah. I love that Larry Nance Sr. also was the one who gave the team the trophy.
Yes.
Like, now when
Larry's here.
Well, I just, like, this has to be really cool for Larry. He,
100%.
Like, out of all the NBA players that I've interviewed, he is the most, like, average dude who happens to be 6'9 and can jump really high and is, like, good at basketball guy.
Yes.
Like, if you, they were 0-3 when they wore those suits that LeBron got them and stuff, and they probably should just, like, never wear them again to games, but, like, of all the guys like in suits, he was the one that I was like, this is weird, because every time I've seen him, I swear, he's either wearing like a Revere basketball t-shirt where his brother plays, Cavs like track pants, or like a bunch of Adidas gear.
Yeah, he was wearing a Logic sweater last night. Like, he's just coming in like he's going to a Logic show. Like, it was hilarious.
Larry Nance Jr. is going to be like in the pit at the show at Blossom in July.
100%.
That's going to happen. Looking forward to 100%. Seeing you there, Larry. but like, just like a cool, like, it was like, the picture of Jose Calderon is also just incredible.
Yes.
Just like, it's, and then LeBron, like the clip of him being like, I'm really tired. I'm just so tired. Like, he deserves to just sit there with, like, ice on his body for a long time.
Yes, and, like, intermittently wrapping Meek Mill in the back, but also having to keep his feet in the cold tub. Like, it's just, it was really funny to watch. Like, he wants to get super into it, but he's like, oh, I need to sit back down.
Yeah, LeBron needs just, like, a bottle of vino and, like, a couple days to just, like, rest before he has to fly across country.
Yeah, that's why, like, fortunately, with the final starting on Thursday, like, this little three-day, I mean, they'll probably get back to practice after today, so on Tuesday, but, like, at least they have more than 2 days. Like, 2 days would it, like, whoever wins tonight, that turnaround for the finals is so quick. Like, that's crazy. So I'm really happy that the Cavs got to go finish their series first instead of second.
LeBron as a whole this postseason was great. I don't know if you have a specific, like, thing about this playoff version of LeBron that you're, like, that most, like, fascinates you, but, like, for me, it's, like, the fact that he's had, like, these, like, several blocks. I don't know why that's something that, like, sticks in my mind, just because maybe there's just such, like, a visceral physical thing, but he's, like, had just, like, an incredible amount of blocks. He's turned it on at the right moments, and, like, the fact that he, like, just the sheer, like, the fact that he took a team that Jason Lloyd had this in his final thoughts column, that the Cavs had, like, the 29th defensive rating in the regular season. No team with that bad of a defensive rating had much less won a playoff series than make the finals. Like, he, like, just completely bucked that trend. And, like, he deserves, like, 95% of the credit for getting them there. And just, like, how dominant he's been in so many different ways. Like, like, who knows if this is the last ride with him in Cleveland, but, like, good Lord. Like, he's done everything you could have asked him to. Like, I don't know if there's, like, he's had moments, of course, that were bad. Like, he had that really weird turnover where he passed the short corner last night. That was in game seven. That was bad. He's had some defensive times where you're just like, LeBron, you're chilling right now. Like, I get you. But he's just been, like, every time they've needed him to, he's just, like, he's been absurd. And, like, I don't know if you feel this way, but this is the first time I've seen, like, the Twitter MJ thing him debate be shift just, like, oh, maybe, people just, more and more people saying that is the goal. Like, not just, like, Cleveland people, but, like, people outside of our little bubble.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know how you can watch, like, that block on Rozier last night. I mean, the block itself, unbelievable. But, like, the way he timed it perfectly, like, he sat back for a second so that he could take a couple steps where he knew he was going to meet Rozier, like, at the apex of his jump. Like, that to me, and I noticed it immediately because you could see him on the side of the court and you could see him kind of, like, loading himself up. But he waited a second. And, like, that stuff to me, to be able to, like, have the foresight to know, oh, okay, wait, I need to slow down for 1 second so I can kind of, like, explode at the exact moment that I need to is crazy. And he just, I mean, there's so many things. Like, you can think about game two against Toronto where he's hitting every fadeaway he takes. Like, there's the 2 threes over Tatum in game six that are just outrageous. There's the, you know, I can't even remember the Indiana series anymore. It feels like it was 100 years ago. But, like, he just has, like, these singular moments. Like, the and one last night, to me, that was such a... The game was essentially already in the bag, but it was still just kind of like that. He just has these moments where when that play was happening, it's like, oh, well, at least we're going to get free throws out of this. And then he just, like, Marcus Morris is a big dude who is hanging on his neck like a cape. And, like, LeBron just shrugs it off and gets the and one anyway. It's just like, these are the moments with him that you can kind of, like, that's how I'll go whenever he does either retires or is with another team. Like, there will just be these moments, these individual moments that you piece together of his career as a Cav that you can always just, like, reminds you where you were during the game or, like, what year it was and what that series was like. And, like, that to me is what's so crazy. And I feel like he had so many of these. Like, we're not even talking about his game winners, like the one off the 1 foot.
The most absurd shot, like, I've ever seen, I think.
The most absurd game winner ever and the 3 against Indiana. Like, he's had so many of those moments this postseason that it's really hard. Like, I just literally forgot for a moment about his 2 game winning shots, which is, like, stupid because he's, you know, like, but he just does so many things in every single game that it's just. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you just get better from, like, what, like, 2009, 2010 felt like his athletic peak, you know, or maybe that first or second year in Miami. And it's just like, he's been better. And
it's literally the only reason the Cavs are alive.
I mean, I think Brad Stevens had a moment in his presser last night where he, like, briefly looked at, he was trying to remember what LeBron's line was, and he, like, looked down and was like, oh, yeah, and he still had, you know, whatever the line was last night. And he just kind of, like, shook his head and was like, that's unbelievable. And then, like, got back into the answer he was given for the question. Like, that's what that moment is, what LeBron is. You look down and you're like, oh, my God. And it's every night.
Lee Jenkins tweeted out this quote from LeBron last night. I don't know if you saw this. I just saw this now. But he said, this is from an interview LeBron did 6 years ago. And he said, you put my mother on the floor, and if she were in a Boston Celtics uniform, I'd break her face. Like... LeBron, something about him in the Garden, like, obviously he had that little bit with the Cavs that was not great, but his best game ever was in Boston. Had last night was very good in the series for the most part. He just loves playing the Celtics. There's something, like, really fun about him playing the Celtics, and it's, like, kind of fun that when you look ahead, that if he stays in the East, he stays with the Cavs, whatever he does, like, that the team that is going to be challenging him into the next stage of his career, it's like the team, it's like either them or Philly, but it's Boston's one of the best two equipped teams in the East, if LeBron stays in the East, to push him in the conference he's been to the finals at, dominated for the last 8 seasons.
Yeah, like, there's been, I think Boston has always, like, loved to antagonize him too, like, more so than any team he's played in the playoffs. Like, maybe those early Bulls teams where Joakim Noah, like, would yell at LeBron, but nobody else really would. Like, that first that first run with Cleveland, it was, I can remember like Kevin Garnett getting LeBron on a switch and just clapping in his face, like waiting for LeBron to like drive it. And Paul Pierce, like,
Paul Pierce is still salty. Like, let's just be like, he's still super salty.
Like, he's taking pictures with a fan in a LeBron is a douche t-shirt last night. Like, he is not over any of it. And then with this kind of, you know, whether it was Jay Crowder when he was with the Celtics, like, talking a lot of smack, and now you've got Marcus Morris, and you've got Jason Tatum dunking on him and then trying to chest bump him, which I feel like was just a poor idea.
And Marcus Morris, like, yelling in his,
yes,
like, yeah.
Marcus Morris is always yelling at somebody in the background, and it is infuriating.
Like, LeBron also in the moment looked surprised almost, like, that.
And he was like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was like, wait a second, Tatum, hold on, man. Like, you can get the dunk off, but don't chest bump me. Like, that's not gonna don't do that. So I think, yeah, all versions of these Celtics teams that LeBron has faced over his career have, like, loved going back to Paul Pierce spitting at him in a preseason game, like, years ago. So, like, it's, I get it. Like, he not only has he had some of his most iconic games on the road in Boston, but it's just been, like, multiple versions of this rivalry. I mean, it's the reason why I like Boston sports. I mean, I know I'm not alone in this in many parts of the country, but like, Boston sports is probably my least favorite collection of sports teams. And it stems from those Celtics teams with Paul Pierce and Rondo and Garnett. And it's kind of carried on since then. So the saying like break her face is a hilarious way to say, like, I fear for Gloria's life if she ever puts on, like, accidentally a Celtics jersey. I don't know when that would ever happen, but, like, just be careful, you know, Gloria? Stay woke out there.
Yeah, like, don't be super into Jason Tatum's game or, like, Jaylen Brown. Or, don't be like, Kyrie was such a nice kid when he was here. Like, don't do that. Like, don't support.
Don't do that.
Yeah, especially don't maybe wear the Kyrie one. Yeah. Is this the worst team LeBron's dragged to the finals, though? Like, that's the other aspect of this that I don't know how we quantify this. I think looking back at that 07 team that got swept, that team actually played really good defense, and they, like, had this identity, and this team, like, doesn't really have an identity for all the success they're having, and the fact that they made the finals. Ty, to his credit, has just, I think, just had to throw stuff at the wall and just try to figure out what works, and sometimes his instinct is not what I would do, but, like, it ended up working, and, like, his faith in Jeff Green paid off. His knowing when to go back to Tristan, knowing when to do with Nance in game six, all that's paid off. And like, yes, some of these guys might be more athletic than, like, Eric Snow and Daniel Marshall and like, Z and whatever. And, like, Kevin Love's obviously very good. But, like, this might be the worst group he's ever taken to the finals. I think it's clearly worse than the last three teams that made the finals. I think, like, we might underrate last year's team to some degree considering how they lost and how good Golden State was. But, like, this might be the worst team LeBron's ever dragged. And I think at the very least, if it's not a fact, it's very, very, a very, very clear debate that should be had to some degree when you think about what he's doing at age 33.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think this team is better than the 07 team, and I think that's mostly, but I do think in certain areas, like, the inconsistencies of this team, like, I think that's a good point you make, that, like, that 07 team with Mike Brown, like, they played their ass off defensively. And they always did. Like, if there was one thing that you were going to do under Mike Brown, you may not do anything else well or competently, but, like, his defensive schemes and his knowledge of defense was phenomenal. And so they were always, like, top 1, 2, 3 in the league under Mike Brown in those years. But, like, I saw a video, somebody posted this video on Facebook, and it was the intro to game 3 of that 07 final. So the first game back in Cleveland after they lost the first two in San Antonio. And, like, you got Booby Gibson and Varejao and Z, and, like, Sasha Pavlovich started. And I just, like, that team was so bad. Like, that lineup was so bad. And, like, on paper, you look at Kevin Love and George Hill, and, like, there shouldn't be a comparison of those two teams, but George Hill has just been so weird, especially on the road, and Kevin Love was a ghost in that Indiana series, played great against Toronto, and then before he got hurt in this series was kind of in and out. So, like, I think it's close just because of how inconsistent. And then the Cavs just getting, you know, like, when you throw in Jordan Clarkson and you have bad Jeff Green games, And you have a game like Larry Nance last night, when he's just Al Horford just completely destroys him, and the Cavs can't figure out how to play pick and roll with Nance when Horford was out there. Like, those are the times where, like, I can understand the comparison, because the games that the Cavs were bad and their role players were bad, it was, like, really hard to watch. Like, the first half last night, when they're missing everything, and that happened multiple times this postseason, where the role players can't hit wide open shots, and you're just like, what is happening? I don't understand. Like, that to me, it's like, yeah, it's close to 07. But I just don't – I think that 07 team was such an abomination in terms of, like, outside of LeBron. That, for me, I still don't think this team is as bad, because you at least have, like, guys that could hit threes, and, like, Kevin Love is an all-star, and so – and George Hill is a really good player. But, I mean, it's close. If you – their worst games, it'd be interesting to look at, like, some of the Cavs' like worst shooting games in these playoffs versus, like, some of the Cavs' worst. I know the games are so much different, the scoring totals are way different, and how they, the amount of threes they took, but, like, I think their worst game might be far worse than whatever the worst game of that 07 team had.
I think the low definitely seems to be there for this group. I just want to point out, though, that Sasha Pavlovich is only 34 years old.
Yeah, see, that's not... You think he's aged? You think he's aged? I don't think he's aging.
I'm sure he's looks exactly the same. Like, played for the Celtics too, which is funny.
I mean, Sasha Pavlovich. You can't even pronounce his name anymore. What a weird. Like, you remember when he had that dunk against the Heat? It was like a putback dunk. I forget, and it was in the regular season. It might have been, like, overweight, or it was just one. He just had, like, these plays where you'd be like, wow, why are you randomly amazing right now?
And then
you
wouldn't... He's 07 Jeff Green.
Yeah, he is, exactly. That's a good point. And then he would just disappear for months, and you'd never hear from him again. And then, like, now he's just, who knows where he is right now. So, yeah, he's always a fun name to think about sometimes.
Yeah, looking at that team, the 06, 07 Cavaliers, the roster was, LeBron was 22, and some of the supporting guys on this team, obviously Z, Drew Gooden, Larry Hughes, Anderson Varejao, young Andy Varejao, Eric Snow at age 33, Pavlovich at 23, current Cavs assistant coach Damon Jones at the ripe old age of 30. Damon Jones also, like, a little bigger now. Danielle Marshall at age 33, a 20-year-old Booby Gibson, David Wesley, Shannon Brown, Ira Neubel, Scott Pollard, and Dwayne Jones. Ugh.
I mean, that's a disgusting roster.
Terrible roster. It's like just
so,
like,
bad.
Like, and so I think the point that, like, the Cavs maybe have more talent now, but, like, their low is lower, and the lack of an identity, I think, makes it sort of an interesting question. But it's super. Yeah. Both are super impressive, regardless of what happens. Maybe he gets swept again in the same kind of scenario, and that tells us something about how teams have built around LeBron, and how the Cavs have failed to maybe build the best team possible around LeBron. But it is what it is. And maybe Rodney Hood will just, like, come alive in the finals and, like, yeah, that's probably not going to happen.
That's probably not going to happen. Yeah, I mean, it's a bummer, because I think outside of the three years he played with Kyrie, the Cavs, yeah, just really struggled to ever put an amazing team around him, and or a team good enough to, you know, consistently get to the finals, especially that first time around. I mean, I think my one hot take is that team that lost to the Orlando Magic in 2009 was good enough to win the title. I don't know if they would have beat the Lakers or not, because they would have had a ton of trouble dealing with Paul Gasol and Andrew Bynum. But, like, even though that roster, sometimes people, like, look at it and are like, oh, wasn't that good? I mean, like, Mo Williams had an incredible year. Now, he didn't play well in the playoffs, but whatever. I love Delonte West. Like, Delonte West was really good that year. I just think they were, like, that team was very good, and they won 66 games for a reason. And, like, I always believed that team, and they were up in almost, I mean, they blew double-digit leads in both game one and game two, even though they won game two in that miracle. But they should have been up 2-0 in that series. Like, they would just destroy the Magic in the first half, and then they would forget how to guard the three-point line. So, like, I maintain that team was good enough to win the finals. But that's really the only time that I felt like the roster around LeBron was legitimately good enough to get to a finals where it didn't just have to be LeBron and nobody else, even though LeBron averaged like 38 points per game in that series against Orlando. So maybe it doesn't matter. He just always does it. But yeah, I mean, it will be kind of a bummer to look back on, you know, if this is his last year with the Cavs, about how bad of a job some of these front offices did putting LeBron with like a legitimate number two in any of those years that he was with the Cavs.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what goes forward. I think the team at least is in a better spot, as you and I have talked about before, that like they're not completely screwed as they were when LeBron left last time. But last thing we're going to talk about is LeBron's free agency. Just there's nothing new on what he's going to decide. We're a month as this podcast goes up from his player option date. So keep that in mind that this is going to come up pretty fast after the finals and after the draft. But David Kemenyan had a quote from Dan Gilbert after game seven that when he talked about LeBron free agency, and this is what Gilbert had to say. Like him, I think he said this, we're just focused, and it's the truth. It's not avoiding the question. We're literally focused on the now. It's just so intense in the playoffs and getting to the finals and now the finals. I don't think, and I know he doesn't, I don't think even our guys are talking about anything other than what's in front of them. So everyone knows, obviously, what we want to happen, and we'll take the finals first and take it from there. The Cavs obviously want LeBron back. The Cavs would, like, that's their plan A, it's their plan B, it's their plan all the way through the letter Y. Their plan Z is like, well, I don't know what we do then.
Plan Z is, like we discussed the other day, London Perantes and Ani Zizic.
Bring out the tanks. Jordan Clarkson shoots like 50 times
a
game.
Yeah, Jordan Clarkson takes 50 shots a game, and then and then London Perantes takes the other 10 shots available.
Yeah, and Jetty and Zizic are just being happy, like playing 40 minutes a night.
Yeah,
like,
look, I'm here for that future, Chris. I'm here for it.
It's a pretty bleak future, but
it's bleak, but I embrace it.
Yeah, tanking in a worst possible draft, like that's not the issues, but I think that's like the right thing for Dan Gilbert to say. Like I don't. There's nothing surprising about this to me. I'm very sure that Kobe Altman and the rest of the front office are like thinking about this and are coming up with plans and are mapping out scenarios. They have to be thinking about that pick. The Cavs are, because they're in the playoffs, are the like one of the teams that I think they're working out guys would be my assumption, but they're not having the open media workouts like other like the Jazz have had and some other teams have had because they're just not time for that. So they're working on this. LeBron also is just not going to tell, like, LeBron owes them nothing. It would not surprise me just based on my gut, no reporting or anything on like that, but like that if this does take like into July a little bit, you know, like maybe July 4th, July 5th, sort of when Hayward and KD have decided in the past, that to me makes sense. Dan Gilbert's also just got it, like, there's nothing I think Dan Gilbert can do, right? Like, LeBron has all the leverage, and I think like he's Dan Gilbert's saying like the right thing in the situation, but it's also worth reminding that like the Cavs are at LeBron's mercy to a large degree here.
Yeah, there's not a lot you can do. I mean, you can present LeBron with a plan of like, we're gonna go after Paul George, we're gonna go after Kawhi, we're gonna go after whoever, or you know, we're gonna draft so and so and then try to flip it, you know, and get you this, or, you know, here's the player we think pairs best with you from this draft or whatever. I mean, I think that's the extent of what you can do. And I think having gone through this already, the Cavs are probably very well aware of that. And it doesn't quite feel as pressurized, obviously, as 2010. I think it's just going to be one of those things where you have to hope that, one, I'm glad they made it back to the finals. Like, I really do think that makes a difference in LeBron's mind, just in terms of, like, if they had lost in the first round, I would have felt in so much worse about,
just all the weeks, all the weeks of LeBron, like yes, with, like, Paul George soon to be eliminated and Kawhi, like, chilling in New York, like, the Machiavelli LeBron.
He'd pop up at a Dodgers game with Kawhi. He would have been at that Dodgers game with Kawhi, and everybody would have been like, oh, my God, you know, like, yeah, it would have just been horrible.
Yeah, it would have been like, oh, all right, this is a thing now. LeBron just out there scheming.
Yeah, so I'm relieved that that didn't happen. I think you just have to hope that, like, having, like, the things that I do think are legitimately meaningful to him in terms of, like, having his kids play at the high school he went to, having, you know, being close to Akron and continuing to do his kind of charity work and his foundation and all that stuff there, like, not wanting to move his family again to another, to a completely different city that they've never, you know, lived in before. And like, I think, and then you have the whole, you know, I think we learned the first time that LeBron can, you know, say a lot of things. And I mean, this is any athlete, any premier athlete in sports who says things when they're younger about wanting to stay someplace and then leaves. But like, you know, I think it would not be a super great look for him for the second time to like have written something like he wrote for Sports Illustrated about, you know, retiring here and using his influence here and then, you know, leaving again. Like, I mean, I don't think that'll ultimately end up affecting his decision, but it wouldn't be a super good look for him. So I think you just have to hope that those things that do matter to him, which I think they really do, especially when it comes to the family and seeing his kids in a St. Vincent St. Mary jersey, like I think that's a big deal to him. And I think that has some sway, but it's got to come down to if he looks at the Cavs in the future, and I think this is where presenting some semblance of a plan to him is going to come into play, but like he's got to feel good about their next steps and whatever happens in free agency and in the draft this summer. And, you know, if he feels like it's bleak, then I don't, you know, then he's not going to stay. But if he feels like there are avenues where he can add, I mean, you can't stand pat with this team. You have to add some sort of impact player. So I think that like to find an avenue to that, and if he believes they can have an avenue to that, then yeah, he'll stay. But it's always been about, I really do think it's always been about the roster and what the future looks like and if they can compete for championships. And like, that's going to be the ultimate factor. Cause if he doesn't feel that way, then yeah, he's not going to spend the end of his career in a place where, you know, they're getting, like, he's not going to go through a season like this again. You know, like,
the window's way too short for him to do
like,
that.
So if he feels like that's going to be something that's going to happen, then he's going to go. And like, I don't blame him for that, but you just kind of have to hope that those things, like the Cavs have a plan and that the stuff with his family and being close to home, like those two things will kind of collide and make it hard for him to go somewhere else.
Yeah, I think Wendy has said that he feel his like inclination is that LeBron like wants to stay and make it work, but like he just doesn't know if it can. I think that's like a pretty fair read in too. The culture really needs like LeBron and Larry Nance like yelling at each other at like a high school basketball game.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely.
Like Larry Nance in like full on Revere gear. I don't even know if they're in the same division or not. Like the high school reporters out there should like let me know. But I would like enjoy like a Revere St. Vincent Mirror game where like they're playing in a tournament and it's like LeBron and Larry Nance like,
I mean,
getting super ramped over it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think out of all of the people that they got, and I think they said this when the trades happened, but like I do think the Cavs feel the most, or feel strongly about Larry Nance and like LeBron as a pairing for the future, and not just like having to rush Larry Nance into this offense, you know, halfway through a season and trying to figure it out, because it's still very hit or miss with him. But like I do think as like a pick and roll partner for LeBron, like Larry Nance could be really good, especially having a full off season under his belt to like develop that with LeBron. So like I do think there's a couple of intriguing pieces on this roster. Like I, you know, the Jordan Clarkson thing, he played so well and shot so on the regular season, but then, you know, you kind of see what happens when the lights get a little bit brighter for him. And I'm way more down on Jordan Clarkson than I was before these playoffs started. So I don't know if there's a route to success with him on the Cavs moving forward, but like I do think between Larry Nance and whatever happens with Rodney Hood, because I do think Rodney Hood has ability. I don't really know what's going on with him. So I think there's a couple of pieces on this roster that, like, for LeBron, obviously you need to do a lot of other things. But like, I don't think the cupboard is totally bare where he looks at this roster and is like, we have to gut this entire thing, because I don't think you have to do that. But it's obviously you can't come up and be like, look, man, we got Larry Nance and maybe Jordan Clarkson will be good, or Rodney Hood. Like, that can't, you know, that can't
Kyle
be
Kyle Korver's a year older.
Yeah,
you
know, like,
you still got Kevin. Kevin's just like, yeah, I'm here. Like, this is cool.
I'm like, look, man, LeBron, you know what you'll get from me, man. We don't have to sugarcoat it anymore. So, yeah, they're going to have to do something big. And whether that's, you know, through the draft or using the draft to acquire, you know, a big free agent name, But it's going to have to be something. They're going to have to show LeBron a way to get there.
Yeah, especially because it's probably going to come after they get shellacked in the finals. Like, that just seems likely.
Yeah,
so,
the mood will be different after the finals. And especially if they get, like, I think if the Warriors win tonight, like, I just do not, I think it's going to be tough. There's going to be some rough games, especially like that, those first two in Golden State. So, things are going to flip a little bit.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, but we'll be following along the way as will Jordan. You can find Jordan on Twitter at Cleve Zerm. Jordan, man, thanks so much.
Chris, it's always a pleasure.
Go Browns.